All right, well, it's hard to really describe what's happening with Trump spiraling into the abyss of madness, I suppose, at this point. Trump has gone all out attacking many of his key supporters from the independent media. By name, Trump is now attacking Candace Owens, Alex Jones, Tucker Carlson, and Megyn Kelly. He put out a post that says, quote, "I know why Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, and Alex Jones have all been fighting me for years," which is not even true, by the way. I mean, they are some of his best supporters. But he continues, "especially by the fact that they think it is wonderful for Iran, the number one state sponsor of terror, to have a nuclear weapon, because they have one thing in common, low IQs," he says. "They're stupid people. They know it, their families know it, and everyone else knows it too." It's almost like you should put on there, you know, "and poopy poo in your pants too." You know, it's like this is kindergarten language or something. He says, "they don't have what it takes and they never did. They've been thrown off television, lost their shows, blah, blah, blah." Okay, so first of all, Tucker Carlson is by any measure one of the most successful independent journalists in the history of America. He's an extraordinary person, really. Extraordinary in his interview skills, in his courage, in his inquisitiveness about what's happening in the world. I've never met Tucker Carlson. I've never interviewed him. But I'm just honored to be a fellow American alongside Tucker Carlson. I mean, I know people who know him and talk to him on a regular basis, etc. And Tucker is a high integrity, extraordinary person. Maybe I will get to meet him one day. I would certainly enjoy that. I like meeting high integrity, high IQ people. So for Trump to call Tucker Carlson low IQ is just clearly some kind of, I don't know, lashing out of desperation from a president that is spiraling into the abyss, like I said earlier. And to call Candace Owens low IQ, and to call Candace Owens a loser and a failure, etc., it's just nonsense. Clearly, Candace is also extremely bright, incredibly courageous. She is above anyone, I think, in our modern world, willing to pursue politically risky stories like Charlie Kirk, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, which was clearly an inside job, obviously. We all know that at this point. But not only that, but a lot of other stories as well. Candace Owens, again, I've never met her. I've never interviewed Candace, although I would love to interview her one day if that ever happens. But to call her low IQ is also just absurd. It's absurd. And Alex Jones, I mean, Alex Jones has been fighting against the deep state establishment since, I don't know, 1997 or something. Alex has been at this longer than almost anyone. I mean, maybe Steve Quayle has been at it longer than Alex, but Alex is right up there, that's for sure. And to call Alex low IQ is also really absurd. You know, Alex has an extraordinary memory, for one thing. He's able to pull together documents that he read, you know, 15 years ago. And he's able to remember events and names and organizations and how they all interconnect and keep it all in his head. And, you know, one of the things that people don't really know about Alex, perhaps, because I've hosted with him on his show, you know, I've sat beside him many times when the desk in front of us is just covered with stacks of paper, stacks of news. And the funny little secret about Alex Jones is he doesn't need any of those stacks to do the show. I mean, he could talk about any of those subjects without having to read any new articles, because he's constantly absorbing information. So, you know, and look, I may not agree with Alex all the time on every single thing, and he the same back towards me as well. That's okay. It doesn't matter. We're independent-minded people. But to call Alex low IQ is also completely absurd. Totally absurd. And by the way, Alex paid the highest price of anyone for supporting Trump. You know, it was Alex's support of Trump that actually got him targeted with all the lawfare about the Sandy Hook trials and, you know, the civil trials, which involved a bunch of CIA operatives and a bunch of spooks and a bunch of shenanigans and rigged court, you know, rigged judge, everything. The whole thing was rigged to get a judgment against InfoWars for like $1.5 billion that still hangs over the head of Alex and the entire organization. You know, they don't even control their own money. All the revenue they have for 2 years now has been controlled by this, I don't know what is, a court-appointed stewardship that handles all the money, all the payroll, everything. Like, every expenditure has to be approved. Alex doesn't even have control over the finances of InfoWars because the court took that away from him. Alex has been stripped of all personal wealth, period, everything, because he supported Trump. And, you know, Trump owes Alex big time. Trump owes Alex. And I've often thought that Alex should sue the federal government for malicious persecution, because I think the government owes Alex $1.5 billion, frankly. And it wasn't Trump that prosecuted Alex. It was, you know, the CIA. It was other elements. I think it all started under Obama. I'm not exactly sure of the timeline of it all. But, you know, under Joe Biden, it all continued as well. But Trump owes Alex Jones. I don't think Trump would be president without Alex Jones, frankly. And Tucker Carlson, you know, campaigned for Trump. And Megyn Kelly, in her own way, also did as well. And many other people. And even, you know, I went out on a limb and I defended Trump against the, you know, the fake impeachment and the fake Russia hoax and all that nonsense, which was all completely fake. And yeah, you know, the election was rigged against Trump in 2020. That's well known at this point. And I've defended Trump against all the crazy attacks on him this entire time. But what Alex says now, Alex Jones, he says that the Trump that we have in 2026 is not the Trump that we used to know and love. He's changed. He's different. And that's true. And that's an important observation that Alex has made. The Trump that we have now doesn't seem to care about MAGA, doesn't care about his own base. He doesn't care about America. All he cares about is serving the interests of a foreign nation, Israel. And Trump is willing to throw all his own people under the bus and throw the American people under the bus. This is going to go horribly, horribly wrong for the GOP in the midterms, to the point where I would bet that the GOP is going to have to remove Trump, or the GOP is going to have a political wipeout in the coming midterm elections. That's my prediction. You know, the Democrats want Trump to stay in, actually, because he's such a horrifically bad example of just a runaway rogue president. So the Democrats want to run against Trump, even though Trump's not up for election. The GOP should be the party that encourages Trump to resign and replaces him. And then maybe they might have a chance to be competitive in the midterms, depending on, you know, a lot of things, I suppose. But Trump is spiraling at this point, and I don't know if it's a combination of pressures because the war has gone horribly. He hasn't achieved victory in any real way at all. He doesn't control the Strait of Hormuz. All the U.S. military bases in the Persian Gulf region have been destroyed or evacuated or both. The petrodollar is weakening. The U.S. military is being shown to be weak and a paper tiger and unable to project power, unable to protect its allies. And on top of that, America's allies like Taiwan and Japan and South Korea, plus many others, are also finding out that there's a great cost to being a U.S. ally. You don't get any energy, you don't get any military protection, and you get hit with tariffs. On top of that, you get punished for being a U.S. ally. And all of that traces back to Trump. So it's not just that people like Alex Jones are criticizing Trump or people like myself or Tucker Carlson, and all of his criticism of Trump has been rational, entirely legitimate, you know? But it's not just that. It's that every U.S. ally around the world is right now cursing Trump. I mean, maybe not publicly, but privately. Oh, my God. They're thinking to themselves, what on earth have we done? We chose the wrong champion here. We chose the wrong team. If we stay tied to the United States, our economies are going to collapse. We have no military protection. The currency that we're demanded to use is weakening by the day. That's the petrodollar, etc. And that's why countries like Taiwan, the pro-China political party in Taiwan, known as the Kuomintang, or KMT in English letters, has sent a representative to meet with President Xi in China. And this representative, a woman, is negotiating, and to great applause in China, by the way, she is spreading a message of peace and cooperation, that the only way for Taiwan to have a future is to find peace and cooperation with mainland China instead of trying to achieve Taiwan's independence. And this message is getting a tremendous amount of traction in Taiwan and even, you know, outside of Taiwan. There are two primary political parties in Taiwan, the KMT, like I mentioned, and then the DPP. The DPP is the one that's always calling for independence, but the KMT wants to rejoin with mainland China. Now, I used to be a person who was always talking about Taiwan's independence, years ago, because I used to live in Taiwan, and I have great respect for the Taiwan people and Taiwan innovation and creativity and work discipline, etc., and intelligence. Today, I have to say that it's a danger to be an ally to the U.S., and Taiwan probably needs to find a way to cooperate, you know, join mainland China and have the trade advantages and the military protection of mainland China. Because hanging out there right next to China, but under the, quote, protection of the U.S. is actually a danger. The danger is that the U.S. could do to Taiwan what NATO did to Ukraine, which is to sacrifice a country as a proxy in a war against Russia, in the case of Ukraine, or a war against mainland China, which would devastate Taiwan's economy and slaughter millions of Taiwan citizens. And I don't want to see that happen at all. And by the way, the real future for Taiwan, the brightest future, the most economically abundant future, is going to be one where they benefit from China's trade routes and trade reach and diplomatic weight all around the world, where Taiwan itself cannot possibly hope to achieve that as an independent nation. So the reason I mention all of this is that Trump is causing many U.S. allies, such as Taiwan, to absolutely rethink their entire loyalty to the United States. The U.S. empire is collapsing, just like Trump's presidency is collapsing. And even countries like Japan are now just selling off U.S. treasuries at a rapid pace. And it's unclear to me whether Japan can continue to function as a U.S. military outpost, which is effectively one of the ways that the U.S. is using and exploiting Japan, and has since the end of World War II, since 1945. So South Korea has been left vulnerable by the United States, which has stripped South Korea of anti-missile defense systems to send them over to Israel. So South Korea is just left basically defenseless against North Korea. And there are many other examples of this as well. You know, Australia is suffering tremendously because lack of fuel due to the actions of Trump. The UK suffering tremendously. All of Western Europe is suffering. And there are other allies around the world that are also being hit hard, like India. So the most expensive ally for any country in the world to have is the United States of America. And that's because of Trump. And Trump is proving that every single day. So again, not only is the Trump presidency spiraling and it's becoming a dumpster fire, but also the reputation and the strength of the United States empire around the world is also evaporating because of Trump's actions, right before our very eyes. And this is going to recalibrate the entire world, really. This is going to reform the structure of multipolar power all around the world. And as I said in my previous podcast, Trump's actions have made Iran a world power. Iran is now a world power contender because it now asserts control over approximately 20% of the energy of our world, that is, or energy exports of our world, which come out of the Persian Gulf, obviously. And because of Trump's actions, now Iran has that control, which they did not have 6 weeks ago. Think about that. They didn't have that control 6 weeks ago. Now they do because of Trump. 6 weeks ago, America had, you know, it was like 27 military bases or something all around the Middle East. Today, that number is effectively zero because of Trump, or at least zero functioning military bases. They could be rebuilt, but probably Iran would just bomb them again. So Trump is just absolutely destroying America's reputation, America's power, America's reach, America's leverage, America's—I mean, even just the ability to threaten other countries, that has been diminished greatly by the military failures in dealing with Iran. And no doubt Trump is going to now triple down on all this, and he's going to try to land troops. You can see the buildup. That's where he's going with this. He's going to try to throw 100,000 troops or something into Iran and think, well, this ought to do it. You know, we'll just invade. And it's going to be the worst disaster ever, the worst quagmire imaginable. And it's going to fail. And Trump's going to go down in history as the worst failure of U.S. presidents in the history of the Republic. That much is clear. And it will be shame brought upon or cast upon the GOP for decades to come if the GOP doesn't do something to remove Trump from power here through 25th Amendment or impeachment or what have you. So that's where we are right now. And of course, I'm not the only one who sees this. Lots and lots of people see it. Matt Bracken and Robert Barnes and, you know, of course, Alex Jones sees it. And so many more. And heck, even Benny Johnson, who I had criticized pretty harshly, he seems to be changing now. He's saying that Netanyahu should be banned from visiting the White House or having any influence over the White House. And yeah, that's absolutely true. 100%. So, hey, maybe Benny Johnson's coming around. I'm always willing to, you know, to reevaluate people once they reevaluate their own positions. And I judge people on their actions. So, look, the bottom line here is that Trump has divorced America and he has married his mistress, which is Israel. You got it? So he divorced America and he threw America out on the street or under the bus. It's like, goodbye, America. I mean, Trump should basically, he should just change his citizenship to be an Israeli citizen because he's got no loyalty to America. He doesn't represent America. He doesn't have American values, clearly, at this point. He doesn't respect the rule of law, the Constitution. He doesn't believe in representational government. He's thrown all that away as well. He's basically functioning as a member of the IDF. He's basically, you know, Netanyahu light or something. Or like a mini, Netan mini Yahoo, something like that. it's unbelievable. So this is where Trump is today. And Alex is right. It's not the Trump that we knew. It's not the Trump that we supported previously. It's something very different. He's lost his mind or he's been compromised or poisoned or replaced or something. Who knows? It's like mind melded with something, some alien artifacts. Who knows? I don't know. But it's not the Trump we knew. And by the way, at the end of the day, then, with Trump throwing Alex Jones and Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson under the bus and a lot of other people, Trump is choosing to surround himself with some of the most hate-filled, raging Zionist lunatics, fanatics that we've ever seen. People like, you know, Mark Levin and Laura Loomer and Ben Shapiro and others, and none of those people put America first. None of them have the values that represent MAGA. And I don't think, in my view, I don't think any of them are mentally stable either. And they're obviously filled with hatred. They openly call for genocide and mass extermination of all of Islam. They want to nuke or bomb Iran into the Stone Age, like Trump said. And these people cheer that on, which just shows you how dark their hearts are. And if Trump wants to surround himself with darkness, well, I mean, I guess that's his choice. That's the choice that he's made. But I will tell you that if you surround yourself with darkness, it will consume you until you become the darkness. And that's where Trump is going. He's going to end up as just some babbling, deranged, evil. Well, what am I saying? He's already there. I don't know. He's going to take it another step deeper, wherever that goes, you know, into the dark cave of Darth Vader or something. But why would you choose to surround yourself with people like that? Why wouldn't you want to have people that support truth and light and compassion and humanity and honesty and abundance and innovation, creativity, ideas, etc.? You know, that's what I hope to do in my life, is to surround myself with people or associate with people that are good people, that are good faith people. Intelligent, informed, interesting, creative, innovative, and who want to create a better future together. And there are no Zionists that I've ever seen that qualify for that circle. they are some kind of weird apocalyptic fanatics who are filled with hatred and death and destruction. So Trump has decided to go down that path, and it's not going to end well for him or for America or for the world, for that matter. It's going to be bad for all of us. So we need to prepare for that. And, you know, Charlie Kirk was taken out, right? Because he refused to support the Zionist agenda. So they killed Charlie Kirk. I mean, they murdered him. And then they covered it up and tried to blame it on a lone shooter, you know, typical false flag operation. So they killed Charlie. And there's more that they're going to do to try to control things, because they're losing control right now. Big time. They're losing control. Somebody was trying to hack my X account, by the way. Somebody, I think, they were running a brute force attack, because I got these notifications and I had to reconfirm a bunch of stuff to log back in. But somebody was hammering my X account, so they won't be able to succeed, by the way. I don't think so. And I don't click on phishing links and things like that, so you know, they're not going to be able to do it. But they were trying. There are nefarious forces that are trying to compromise those of us who tell the truth. And that's why I appreciate you so much, by the way. Thank you for supporting me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this podcast. And you can follow more of my work at brightvideos.com. And you can also, of course, read my articles at naturalnews.com. Yeah, I know we're all sick of hearing about Israel and its latest round of genocide and violence and lawlessness, but here's why Israel has miscalculated. And it's very unlikely that Israel will survive for another 10 years. First of all, you know, Israel is an artificial construction that has been supported, of course, by the UK in particular, you know, MI6 and British intelligence this entire time, even going back to its founding, by the way. And, of course, the United States supports Israel financially, militarily, with shared intelligence, etc. But Israel has set into motion by sabotaging the peace deal with Iran, for example, by carrying out genocide, clear, repeated genocide, and also by doing things like announcing the Greater Israel Project, in which Israel says it will conquer Turkey, or part of it, you know, southern Turkey, that it will conquer, you know, Syria, that it will eventually want to take Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Jordan, because that's all part of Greater Israel. And the nation of Israel, run by satanic Zionist fanatics, right? Just religious end times fanatics. I don't even know if you can call it religious, but it's more like a cult of death fanaticism. But they want to actively destroy all their neighbors, Lebanon right now, obviously, but that will expand. And in pursuing this, they have intentionally spurred mass chaos on a global scale by arm-twisting the U.S. into attacking Iran, which has resulted in the shutdown of the Strait of Hormuz, of course. And with that shutdown in place, we have a global crisis, of course, that will lead to economic collapse and ultimately the collapse of the dollar. We're already seeing it because Iran is saying that the toll to be paid by the ships that are allowed to pass through the strait, whenever that day comes, that toll cannot be paid in dollars. It has to be paid in either crypto or yuan or some other non-dollar currency, because the dollar is useless when the country behind it has weaponized the trade system. Now, as this is happening, the U.S. is growing weaker financially. Emergency Federal Reserve meetings, bank failures, more of them are imminent. Trump is talking about abandoning the dollar currency and switching us over to a whole new digital currency because, of course, the dollar is dying. And he's part of the reason it is dying. He's not the only reason, but he's a big part of it. At the same time that's happening, the UK is collapsing. Economically, geopolitically, the UK is in a state of accelerating collapse. And part of that's because it cannot get energy. It relied on energy out of the Gulf, the Persian Gulf. And that has been cut off. And previously, the energy that helped Europe across Western Europe was, of course, Russian energy. But the U.S. destroyed the Nord Stream pipelines several years ago, and that cut off all of Western Europe from affordable Russian gas. All right, so the bottom line is that as Israel pursues this war of chaos and total disruption and sabotaging every peace deal and assassinating every negotiator, etc., what Israel is actually doing is undercutting the top two countries that currently make Israel possible. That's the United States and the UK, or let's say Britain, to be more specific, the British Empire. And the UK will fall first, followed by the US Empire. As those empires fall, and I mean economically, currency collapse, banking system collapse, etc., as that happens, Israel will find itself completely cut off from the support artery, let's say, that it needs in order to continue to fund its wars and get its bombs and get intelligence and get, military expertise, etc. By itself, Israel can't wage war against Turkey. It's not even close. Israel has what? At this point, maybe fewer than 7 million people remaining in Israel, maybe a lot less, and its military is on the verge of total collapse. It's surrounded by, I don't know how the exact number, but 100 plus million Muslims. Turkey, 96% Muslim. Egypt, similar situation. Lebanon, Jordan. Look at what surrounds it, right? Syria, etc. Not to mention Iran and Afghanistan, etc. Israel cannot survive without the help of the United States and the UK. And all that actually has to happen for Israel to fall is for one of these major countries like Turkey, which is currently still a NATO member, but NATO is about to be completely destroyed by Trump also. All that's necessary is for Turkey to declare we're going to attack Israel and overthrow Israel. And Turkey actually, by themselves, they have the capability to do that. Not to mention Egypt or Iran or, the Houthis or Hezbollah or Hamas or all these other groups. If they actually cooperated even temporarily, which I know is difficult, but if that were to happen, Israel would be completely overrun. And Israel's nuclear weapons would be taken away from Israel. Now, it doesn't mean that whoever takes them would be able to detonate them. There might be lock codes controlled by the United States. I'm not sure. I'm not sure anybody knows exactly the answer to that. But Israel would no longer have those nukes. And with that, then the dynamic would change drastically. So my point is that Israel is undermining itself by undermining the world's economic backbone that allows the UK to even function as a country, or that allows the United States dollar to maintain its hegemonic status as a global currency. And if Israel isn't careful, it's going to set into motion a series of events that it did not anticipate, which will lead to the collapse of the dollar and the collapse of the American empire. And by the way, Trump is also, of course, delusional at many levels, and his actions can also by themselves lead to the collapse of the American empire. For example, it's becoming very difficult for the U.S. Treasury to auction off new debt. Nobody wants to buy U.S. debt. The yields aren't high enough to justify the risk of default. That's why globally people are still buying gold and silver. And that's why people don't trust the word of Trump or the Treasury or even the Federal Reserve to make good on their debt obligations. That's why countries like Japan and China are selling off U.S. debt in huge quantities. So the collapse of the American empire is something that's going to happen sooner or later anyway. It's just that Israel's actions are accelerating it. And you see it. You see how the infrastructure in America is collapsing. The bridges are falling down. The roads are total crap. The railroads barely function. The airports look like third world country airports. You know, it just goes on and on. It's absolute, you know, it's like living in a third world. So America is collapsing right now. It's just that it will be accelerated by the actions of Israel, because America is very unwise allowing Israel to, you know, to dictate its actions in the Middle East and to continue to accelerate the total destruction of the industrial backbone that powers our world. So get prepared. Gold and silver are still the right answer, in my view. Metalswithmike.com. If you want to check out Battalion Metals, that's our affiliate sponsor, co-founded by Tucker Carlson, one of the great journalists of American history. Again, metalswithmike.com. And you can follow my work at brightvideos.com. Thank you for listening. Take care. Welcome to this food science analysis of glyphosate in off-the-shelf breads. I'm Mike Adams, and this is brightvideos.com. I'm the lab science director of CWC Labs, a ISO 17025 accredited and validated laboratory with multiple mass spec instruments. We'll show you some B-roll here. And I actually co-developed a glyphosate quantitation method using triple quad mass spec instrumentation several years ago. We've used it for many years. We've done probably 10,000 glyphosate tests on foods over the years because, of course, we test our own products at healthrangerstore.com, which is known for ultra-clean foods that are laboratory tested. So when I saw the state of Florida releasing these bread test results with glyphosate numbers that looked rather alarming, I was a little bit shocked. So let me show you my screen here. It's called Exposing Bread Toxins. This is part of the Healthy Florida First. And this is, you know, official. These are numbers from the state of Florida. And they showed that Nature's Own bread, the butter bread, they claimed that it had 190 parts per billion of glyphosate, which is that's a very high number for a bread product. We don't normally see those numbers in breads in our lab. And then we saw Nature's Own, this other white bread was 132 parts per billion. And then it said that Wonder Bread was 173 parts per billion glyphosate. That particularly caught my attention because Wonder Bread is highly, highly processed. And one of the things that you find in the food industry is that the more processed an ingredient is, the lower the glyphosate becomes and the lower the heavy metals become, because the processing really just leaves behind, you know, empty calories, carbohydrates in this case, and not typically many of the contaminants. In fact, you will tend to find higher levels of glyphosate or heavy metals in more natural products many times because they're not as processed. But the processing takes out beneficial nutrients as well, you know, minerals that you might need, such as, you know, magnesium or what have you.
So when I saw this number for Wonder Bread, it made me wonder, like, what? Well, they're seeing 173 parts per billion in Wonder Bread. And then I saw Sara Lee, Honey Wheat, they claim 191 parts per billion. And those are all the results they have. Let's see, Dave's Killer Bread, they claimed it had 10 parts per billion, etc. So, of course, since we have our own lab, multi-million dollar laboratory facility, independently evaluated and accredited, I thought, well, we need to do these tests, because if they're seeing these numbers in the state of Florida, then something has changed in the bread industry, and I need to find out what's going on. So I sent my team out to buy all these breads, as you can see here. These are many of the same brands. I think we have, we've got eight different bread brands here, and mostly the same ones. Here's Dave's Killer Bread, and here's Nature's Own, and Sara Lee, and we've got Wonder Bread down here as well, as you can see. So we went out and bought all these breads, and we ran them through our lab to find out what the test results would be. And that's what I'm going to share with you here today in this presentation. So glyphosate in commercial breads, and you're about to be probably shocked by what you're going to see, because we didn't see the numbers that the state of Florida was seeing at all. Not even close. And let me just give a little bit of background. As the health ranger, I'm well known for being an opponent of glyphosate. I think it's a deadly herbicide. Obviously, it's linked to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's caused mass suffering and death, and it disturbs soil microbes, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to focus on that here, but I am no fan of glyphosate. And, you know, we do glyphosate testing in our lab to make sure that the foods that we sell you at healthrangerstore.com are as free from glyphosate as possible. And so we have an internal rating scale for, you know, different grades, like A or A plus or A plus plus, depending on lower and lower levels of glyphosate, because there's a little bit of glyphosate in almost everything. You're very rarely going to find absolute zero. But what you want to do as a consumer is you want to limit your exposure to glyphosate. And glyphosate, unlike things like dioxins, it's not deadly in low parts per billion concentration. It's not going to kill you to eat a loaf of bread or a slice of bread that's, 10 parts per billion or even 20 parts per billion. I get very concerned when I start to see things over 100 parts per billion. And, we wouldn't personally sell those kinds of products. So I just want to say this up front, because if you're wondering, like, what is my, personal opinion aside from the lab testing, if you're trying to suss out, do I have some kind of bias in this? If I had any bias, it would be as an opponent of glyphosate. And yet the results I'm about to show you here do not align with that bias, because I don't allow my bias to control the lab instruments. The lab instruments, they give us the answers, and those answers are, that's what they are. How many parts per billion, and I don't argue with the instrument. I just let the instrument tell us what it's seeing, and that's what I'm reporting to you here. So this has nothing to do with my opinion about glyphosate or Monsanto or the whole history of Monsanto, whatever. This has to do with what we're finding in the breads and whether the state of Florida is using a lab that knows what they're doing. And I'm becoming increasingly skeptical that they know what they're doing. I will see. But let me show you this. So if we go to the first sample, Sara Lee Honey Wheat Bread, I think the state of Florida number was over 100 parts per billion for this. We found less than 10 times less. We found 9.87 parts per billion in Sara Lee Honey Wheat Bread from Bimbo Bakeries, apparently. That's an interesting name. So that would be rated A++ in our rating system. So there's no, this would not be considered a, harmful product or a contaminated product based on the glyphosate. There might be other ingredients in it that you don't want. I don't know. Maybe it's got high fructose corn syrup in it. I mean, we're not talking about that, so I'm not even going to check. But when it says honey wheat, usually when they say honey, it's corn syrup, usually. But that's not the focus here. My point is that I didn't see anywhere near 100 parts per billion, and we are an accredited laboratory. We know what we're doing. We run glyphosate tests every day. And we've done thousands and thousands of them for years. So I begin to question, like, where is the state of Florida getting these numbers that are over 100 parts per billion? So we kept on testing. Next one is Wonder Calcium Fortified Enriched Bread. This little gem right here. I always joke about the name Wonder Bread because I'm like, I wonder if it's bread, you know? But whatever, that's just my opinion. When it comes down to the lab test, this only showed 6 parts per billion. 6 parts per billion of concentration of glyphosate. And let me just end this presentation. Let's go back to the Florida numbers here. Florida said it's 173 parts per billion. Right there. And again, that, you know, I had a lot of questions about that when I saw it. And sure enough, when we go to our lab test, we only see 6 parts per billion. So something is very different here. Now, I understand that there can be some natural variation because these products are based on, of course, agricultural inputs. And there are different lot numbers that are made from different incoming lots of raw materials. So it's possible that what the state of Florida was testing was a production lot from a farmer that had sprayed more glyphosate as a desiccant on his wheat crop, let's say. And that ended up in that production lot of Wonder Bread, and maybe that was 173 parts per billion. And then the lot that we bought, a different lot, different production, different part of the country, it ended up with only 6 parts per billion. But the reason this is important is because I've seen people all over social media that are sharing the Florida numbers, and they're saying, or they're implying that, well, all Wonder Bread has 173 parts per billion. And that is not true at all. And that's actually, you know, part of my concern here. Look, I would prefer everything be organic in the entire food supply, but that's just my personal opinion. But that would be a lot more expensive for people. So companies that make Wonder Bread, you know, they're not breaking a law to sell non-organic wheat that was sprayed with glyphosate. You know, that's not illegal in the United States at the moment. And if their bread only has 6 parts per billion, which we would rate as an A++ rating for glyphosate, then it's not cool to run around blaming the Wonder Bread company for having 173 parts per billion if that's just not true. And I say this as someone who's not a fan of Wonder Bread and not a fan of glyphosate. But I am a fan of honesty, especially when it comes to laboratory testing. And so I want to share with you the honest numbers that we saw. And what I'm finding is that they're very different from what Florida has been reporting. And the more I look at these results, the more I'm even questioning, does the state of Florida, whatever lab they use, do they know what they're doing? So let's continue. The next one is Nature's Own Thick Sliced White Bread. Well, we only found 5.6 parts per billion, which is, you know, it's not zero, but it's nothing to be alarmed about. I mean, would I eat a slice of bread containing 5.6 parts per billion glyphosate if it were organic? Sure. Yeah, not a problem. I'm not worried about 5.6 parts per billion glyphosate. Why? Because I have great nutrition. I mean, I've got my, you know, superfood smoothies. I've got all these superfoods and antioxidants and, you know, neuroprotective substances. I mean, I lead a very healthy lifestyle. And so I know my body can detox some small amount of glyphosate. It's not like I'm just living on this bread all day long, right? I hardly eat any bread, actually. I wouldn't be concerned about 5.6 parts per billion. But some people, they lose their minds and like, oh my God, we're going to die if we eat a slice of bread. That's just not true. Let's show you the next one. Dave's Killer Organic White Bread Done Right. It's a funny name, Dave's Killer Bread. Less than 5 parts per billion, which means it's not killer bread. It's not going to kill you. And it is organic, it's certified organic. There's the USDA symbol on the bread. And what that shows you, you know, is that the ingredients are scrutinized by a USDA approved program for organic certification. And seeing 4.7 parts per billion glyphosate in organic bread, that's not unusual. That's kind of very much in line with what we would expect with an organic wheat product. And you might think, well, if it's organic, it should have zero glyphosate in it. Yeah, in a perfect world where the wind doesn't blow and glyphosate doesn't go from one farm to the next, then you should understand, I mean, this is why we do testing, because the organic certification doesn't test for glyphosate. I hope you understand that. The USDA's organic program, which I'm very familiar with because of our certifications, it requires no testing for glyphosate and no testing for heavy metals, no testing for atrazine, no testing for dioxins, no testing at all, actually. The USDA organic program only certifies agricultural inputs. It's like, oh, you can't spray it with synthetic pesticides and herbicides, but we don't care how much ends up in it. That's the USDA, for real. I'm not making this up. You can verify it anywhere. So when we see, you know, 5 parts per billion or less in organic products like this, that's not unusual. We see that quite a lot. Now, of course, in our lab, the reason we even do this testing is to make sure that you don't get exposed as a customer of ours to some crazy high level, you know, some super saturated glyphosate soaked wheat product, you know, like macaroni or something. And, you know, so we're like a glyphosate shield. You know, we protect you from excess glyphosate or heavy metals or other things like that. But, you know, our products are, you know, like we don't sell loaves of bread like this, you know, because we have to ship it cross country. We don't sell loaves of bread. So people have to go out to the grocery store if they want to buy bread. So does the organic label mean something? Yeah, it means something, but it doesn't mean it's been tested, you know, just to be clear. All right, moving on. Hardy White Bread Pepperidge Farm also showed about the same, about 4.68 parts per billion, which is, it's getting close to the limit of quantitation for glyphosate, by the way. You're getting down there to the low single digits of parts per billion. Most of the, I mean, we use a liquid chromatography mass spec method for this with a triple quad instrument. In that case, we use a Waters instrument. This level is getting close to the limit of quantitation. So I'm just saying that even the best instruments out there, and that instrument I just mentioned, that's like, I don't know, that's a $400,000 instrument, roughly, give or take. Maybe it's more now because it's been a few years since we bought one. But even a $400,000 instrument can't see much lower than this in terms of the concentrations, okay? So Hardy White Bread Pepperidge Farm, I don't know what else is in it. I mean, we could look, who cares? But glyphosate is not going to be a red alert level. Let's go on to the next one. Okay, Nature's Own Butter Bread. Now, here it is, I think. Yeah, Nature's Own Butter Bread. We've got it right here. All right, this was one of those that the state of Florida said, I think, was very high, over 100 parts per billion. Our test showed it to be 4 parts per billion or 4.02. So there you go. I don't know what else is in this. I mean, looks like a lot of ingredients. I might be horrified if I look at it, so I'm not even going to try to. I would not, you know, I don't eat this stuff, okay? Just to be clear, I don't eat this stuff. But I also think that when the state of Florida is conducting laboratory science with the authority of the state, that they have an obligation to be accurate, you know, to tell the truth, because they may be unnecessarily scaring people about this Nature's Own butter bread for, you know, they might be scaring people over something that's not true. And frankly, that kind of pisses me off. I mean, because I am, as you can tell, I'm very dedicated to scientific accuracy. And even though I'm an opponent of glyphosate, and even though I wouldn't eat almost most of the thing, I mean, I might eat like Dave's organic killer bread. Yeah, because that's organic. I would eat some of that. But most of the stuff I wouldn't even eat. But I still believe that these companies have the right to be described in an honest manner. You know, I could find other things to criticize. Oh, high fructose corn syrup or whatever. I could criticize that. But the fact that the state of Florida is pushing out these very high glyphosate numbers that we could not verify any of those high numbers in our lab, and we are a legit ISO accredited laboratory, that tells me that something's wrong with the lab that the state of Florida is using. I don't think that their calibrations are correct. Frankly, I mean, I strongly suspect that they don't know what they're doing. And I would wonder, are they ISO accredited? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they are, but the report didn't even say which lab it is. So where are they getting these numbers? And I would also ask, like, how many samples did you test? Because I've only tested one sample of each of these, but you can see there's a pattern here. We are not seeing any of the high numbers that Florida is putting out. We haven't seen any bread product over 100 parts per billion, not even close. And we know what we're doing. We do this every day. And we have done it for years, okay? So I'm a stickler for scientific accuracy, even about a product that I wouldn't necessarily recommend. Let's see what else we have here. Sarah Lee, Artisano Bakery Bread. Okay, it's got a fancy name. Where is that? I don't know. It's somewhere around here. Here it is. Sarah Lee Artisano Bakery Bread. Okay. Well, it looks interesting. 3.94. That's getting pretty close to zero, folks, for glyphosate. 3.94 parts per billion. That's zero concern for the glyphosate in this bread. Again, there might be other things. I don't know. I mean, just processed enriched wheat is not something that I would encourage people to chow down on all day long. But for someone to raise all kinds of alarm about this bread over glyphosate levels is dishonest, in my opinion. Well, clearly it's dishonest because we're not seeing those numbers at all. What else do we have here? Here's Dave's Killer Organic Bread, 21 whole grains. Sorry about this. The font is changing on the screen. This is also in the below 4 parts per billion. So, you know, Dave's Killer Bread, not a glyphosate concern. And then we have a table here at the end that just gives you a comparison. So of all the breads that we tested, the highest number we saw was 9.87 parts per billion. And that was the Sarah Lee Honey Wheat Bread. And even that number is not an alarm. It's not a concern. We rated A++++. You know, 10 parts per billion or under is not a typical concern with food products. In fact, you know, if you look at EU standards, if you look at FDA recommendations, 10 parts per billion is not even, that's not a concern. And yet, when you go here to the state of Florida, they're cranking out like 190, 132, 173, 191, etc. And I don't know why the numbers aren't showing here. Maybe they yanked those numbers because there were questions. But let me give you my opinion here. I'm a stickler for scientific accuracy. If I were these companies that were named by the state of Florida as having 100 plus parts per billion of glyphosate in their products, I would sue the shit out of the state of Florida. That's what I would do. I would sue the shit out of them. And I would go out and hire other independent labs, like 3 to 5 other labs, to do the testing. And by the way, I'm not soliciting business. We don't have, I'm not interested. Don't get me involved in your lawsuit, okay? And we don't have bandwidth to test other people's products anyway. We're 100% occupied with our own stuff, okay? So I'm not soliciting business, just to be clear. But if I were these companies, I would sue the state of Florida, and I would get other independent lab test results to show that what Florida is stating on this is not accurate, because I believe that Florida's numbers are not accurate. And I want to be clear. I shared Florida's results on social media because at first I trusted that the state of Florida knew what they were doing. And so, you know, even I was thinking, whoa, this is wild. And especially being that I'm very familiar with glyphosate levels in food, I thought, oh my God, you know, the state of Florida has found some crazy numbers. Like this is very concerning. So I shared that out there. You can see that on my X account. And millions of people shared these numbers. And I would imagine that these brands like Nature's Own and whatever, Sarah Lee or Wonder Bread, you know, there must have been some serious economic damage to those companies over numbers that I now think are not accurate. And so I would challenge the state of Florida to back up these numbers with some legit multi-lab testing. And frankly, I want to see the instrument output. I want to see the peaks. I want to see your method, and I want to see your lab certification, because I think that the state of Florida, I think the state of Florida is completely full of shit about all these numbers. That's my take on it. As someone who would almost never recommend any of these products anyway. But I am a stickler for scientific accuracy and honesty. And I, in the past, I have, you know, revealed alarming numbers about certain products where I was double, triple sure about, you know, the level of lead or the level of whatever contaminant was in those products. I have named names in the past, but I've only done so after extreme redundancy and scrutiny and ISO accreditation and calibration, everything, where I knew that if I got dragged into court, I could back this up. That's why we've never been sued for releasing, you know, test results, by the way, because everybody knows if you sue the Health Rangers lab, you're going to lose because we can back up everything. I don't think that the Florida lab can back up their numbers. I think they made a mistake. So I'm going to wrap this up and say the state of Florida needs to either back this up or they need to retract these numbers. Because I have very real concerns about glyphosate, but when I warn people about glyphosate, that needs to be rooted in reality, not some fantasy numbers that come out of a lab that has bad calibrations or bad methodology, or I suspect they don't know what they're doing, or they're using some method. Maybe they're not even using mass spec, you know? Who knows? I've seen crazy stuff in the food science industry. Trust me, I've seen crazy stuff. I said, like one time, I sent out samples to a lab to confirm some heavy metals results, cadmium in that case, and they came back with results where their cadmium numbers were 1/10 of the cadmium numbers that my lab was seeing via ICP-MS. And I contacted that lab, you know, I was talking to them, and I said, something's wrong with your cadmium numbers. They're way off. What's going on? And they said, oh, we'll get back to you. Like 3 days later, they got back to me. Oh, yeah, our calibrations were off. I'm like, you sent me these as certified cadmium numbers. And they're like, we're off by, you know, a factor of 10. I'm like, what the F? Don't you have external standards? How are you off by a factor of 10? And you're a legitimate lab? And that taught me something very important. I've seen that before, that I don't trust any labs at all. I don't trust any labs unless I verify it myself. Because I've seen crazy shenanigans with labs where they don't have any idea what they were doing. And that was actually a spectroscopy test on cadmium. They didn't have any standards. What I mean is external standards. So in our lab, when we run glyphosate on an instrument, we have glyphosate with a known concentration in water because it's water soluble. So we will take glyphosate at, like, you know, one part per billion, or, I mean, you do a curve, you know, you do 100 parts per billion, you do 1,000 parts per billion, et cetera. You build a calibration curve and then you tell the instrument, this is what glyphosate looks like. This is the elution time on the chromatography. This is the mass to charge ratio, et cetera. And then you know, because you have a freaking standard, a standard that is NIST traceable, that I can prove in a court of law that, yes, here's the standard. Here's the traceability of this standard. That is glyphosate. We know the concentration. And here's the calibration curve. Boom. Fact, right? I find that there are so many labs out there that don't do any of that. They like they calibrate their instruments like once when it's new. And then just run that instrument for 5 years without ever calibrating it again. I'm like, what are you thinking? No wonder you can't be accredited, because you only calibrate your instrument one time. Are you out of your minds? And they'll sell those results. You know, it's unbelievable. And I don't know what lab ran these numbers for Florida, but I'm just giving you in a general sense what I've seen in the lab science industry. There's a lot of shenanigans, let me tell you. Unbelievable. And that's why I don't trust anybody in the food industry. I don't trust anybody in lab science. I don't trust any certifications. I don't trust your USDA organic claim. I don't trust, because I've been around. I've seen everything. I don't trust your country of origin. I don't trust anything that any food company tells me. My default position is you're all full of shit. I don't believe anything until I test it. And that's the attitude that you want from someone like me who runs an e-commerce food manufacturer and retailer, healthrangerstore.com. You want me to have that attitude. You don't want me to just automatically trust somebody that says, oh, it's clean. Oh, we tested for lead. It's all good. Half the time, they don't know what they're talking about. Or they have an instrument that's not even capable of lead detection below like 100 parts per million or something. Or they just, they tune it down to where it has no sensitivity on the ICP. And it's like, we didn't see any lead. Yeah, because your instrument sucks. Because you didn't even tune it correctly. You know, there's like 1,000 ways that they can cheat. That's why I don't trust anybody in the food science industry. And I damn well sure don't trust the state of Florida. I don't trust any government entity putting out these numbers at all. Can you trust me and my lab? Yeah, let me tell you why. Number one, we have no financial interest in this at all. We're not competitors of these companies. They're not paying us, obviously, to do this because I wouldn't promote these products for the most part. Again, maybe Dave's Killer Bread because it's organic, you know, but I'm not in the bread business, okay? Also, our lab is ISO accredited. I wouldn't risk my lab's accreditation by fudging numbers because that actually violates one of the key terms of accreditation. You have a responsibility to be accurate in the numbers that you share, especially when you make them public. You have a responsibility, a moral and a legal responsibility. And I've signed those statements, you know, for the accreditation, and we are audited every year, like I said. So no, I have no financial interest. I have no conflict of interest. I would not risk my lab. I'm not here to gaslight anybody. I'm not here to promote these companies or to harm them. I'm here to give you the truth about what I found. And our lab is legit, and the numbers we found are totally different from what the state of Florida found. And if I were these companies, I would sue the shit out of the state of Florida. And again, I'm sorry for my profanity, but I'm just, you know, I'm fed up with all the deception, really, honestly. I'm just fed up with all the deception. So, in fact, I think I'm going to make a sandwich. Let's make a sandwich, guys, with some Dave's Killer Bread, because it's hardly got any glyphosate in it. Let's just make a Dave Killer Bread sandwich. How about that? Let's do some, let's get some of my farm eggs, and let's do some French toast with that. Just soak them up with some eggs, you know? That actually sounds pretty good. No, they didn't pay me to say that. I don't even know who is Dave? He's got a guitar. I don't know. Dave seems like a cool guy, but whatever. I'm just here to give you the truth. Okay. That's it. End of story. So, and also since I have your attention, support us, you know, cause we did spend millions of dollars on our lab. And the only way we can do that is by you supporting us at healthrangerstore.com. So if you want to go to our website, here it is, healthrangerstore.com. This is the one way you can help us out. Buy our products because we do lab testing, obviously. And we have all these great categories. We've got supplements that we make, preparedness products, personal care, food and beverage, home care, pristine ingredients, special formulations. I've formulated many of these products. I am my own customer. And as you know, I don't put up with crazy fragrance or fillers or synthetic or artificial or MSG or GMOs or any of that nonsense. I don't allow any of that stuff in our products. We have the cleanest, most heavily scrutinized, laboratory tested products in the world by far. There's nobody that even comes close, not even Cool Dave with the guitar. So if you want to support us, then shop at healthrangerstore.com. And no, we don't sell bread. We sell a lot of other great stuff that can help you stay healthy, though, by the way. So thank you for your support. Thank you for watching this. And feel free to share this anywhere you want. And if I get any updates on this, you know, maybe from the state of Florida or whatever, I'll share those updates with you and we'll see what happens. In the meantime, yeah, don't lose your mind over glyphosate in these breads. I think the state of Florida numbers are totally wrong. So thanks for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger of healthrangerstore.com. Take care.
Iran just beat us in a straight up fight.
Good point.
And I know there's going to be people out there that say, no, they didn't. I say, yes, they did. We didn't accomplish any of our objectives. I mean, even Pete Hegseth pounding his chest and saying how he sunk the Iranian Navy. Hey, Pete, Iran just beat two nuclear armed states at their own game. Okay, they compelled us to seek termination of the conflict. It wasn't Iran that came crawling to America. It was America that went crawling to Egypt, Turkey, and Pakistan saying, please open up an avenue of negotiation so we can bring an end to this thing because it's gone bad for us. We haven't won this war.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we are joined by the one and only Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector, a United States Marine, an intelligence officer, an analyst, and someone who I think demonstrates remarkable and consistent courage in being willing to call out stupidity and incompetence and evil, while also helping us analyze what's happening in the world so we can prepare. So welcome, Mr. Ritter. It's always an honor to have you on the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm a fan of your work, and I've watched so many of your interviews over the last year. It's been a while since you and I have spoken. I'm really glad to have you back on the show. But here we stand at the verge of this clearly sabotaged so-called, you know, ceasefire deal. Israel refuses to take part in anything that would lead to peace. And Trump seems to, in my opinion, he's getting owned by Iran. But what is your take of where we are right now? As we record this on a Thursday, what is it, April 8th or 9th, something like that? What's your take?
My take is that we have lost a war we should never have been involved in. There is no reason, no justification, no, you know, cognizable, you know, legal foundation of what we've done with Iran against Iran. It's an illegal war of aggression. And I always start this way because, you know, I'm an American. I love my country, but my country is a constitutional republic, which means I must adhere to the Constitution. That is the thing that makes me who I am and we who we are. If you don't adhere to the Constitution, you're not an American. You may live in the United States, you may call yourself an American, but with all due respect, you're not an American. The only thing that makes you an American is your adherence to the Constitution, your loyalty to the Constitution, because that's what defines our nation. And so when I start off by talking about an illegal war of aggression, I just want to remind people that that concept came from Judge Jackson, who was later a Supreme Court justice, but was the lead prosecutor at the Nuremberg war crime trials at the end of the Second World War that put Nazi leaders on trial. And he said the greatest war crime of them all is the war of aggression, because from that, all other crimes are committed. The United States went to war against Iraq without any legal justification. People can come at me and say, but I don't care. I don't want to hear a but. That's not how it works under the rule of law.
Right.
You don't get to say, you know, but. No.
We hear that it was justified because some groups chanted death to America, or that years ago a group they funded, you know, bombed U.S. soldiers in Beirut or what have you. I mean, those are the things that I hear from people. But none of those are legal justification for war in 2026.
They're not moral justifications for war either. I mean, you know, first of all, I hear about, you know, they killed 1,000 Americans, the Iranians. Qasem Soleimani killed 1,000 Americans. Where? I always respond. In Iraq. How far did Americans have to travel to Iraq to be in a position they were killed? And how far did Iranians have to travel to assist the Iraqis killing them?
Right.
We had to travel thousands of miles. The Iranians live right next door. The other thing is, were we invited to Iraq? The answer is no. We were there illegally. Again, another illegal war of aggression. No justification under the rule of law. So we had illegally invaded and occupied a sovereign state, overthrown a legitimate government, with representation at the United Nations, ambassadors here in the United States. I don't care what you think about Saddam Hussein. I really don't care. He was the legitimate leader of Iraq. We recognized him as such. We had diplomatic relations with his government. So take your personal opinions and throw them away, because they don't matter. You know, we shouldn't have been in Iraq. And so now to blame the Iranians for supporting Iraqi Shia co-faiths to stand up to people who had invaded and occupied their home. Put yourself in their shoes. Imagine for a moment a foreign occupier in your hometown. You didn't invite them here. They're here. And then reflect hard on how American troops behaved in Iraq. The way we ran up and down the roads, the way we machine gunned anything that looked suspicious, kicking down doors, driving families out of their homes. I think if you did that in this hometown, every single man my age would be trying to kill you because you're the enemy.
Yeah.
You want to take umbrage at at the fact that the Iranians helped Iraqi patriots, evict an illegal occupier. So again, that's why I say your moral, I don't care where your morals are, where you feel, if your feelings are hurt. I have two questions to ask. One, did Congress authorize this military operation?
No.
Because Congress is the one. And the answer is no. And two, is this authorized, is this this operation justified under the United Nations Charter? Now, people might, well, Scott, that's international law. That's not really the Constitution now, is it? And I say, really, what about the Supremacy Clause? See, I've taken an oath to the Constitution, and I understand what I took an oath to. When the President of the United States signs a treaty, and the United Nations Charter is a treaty obligation, and it's been ratified by two-thirds or more of the United States Senate, it becomes the supreme law of the land in accordance with the Constitution. So we must adhere and abide by the commitments we made in entering into this treaty relationship. And under the United Nations Charter, there's only two cognizable justifications for going to war. One is you've been attacked, self-defense, Article 51. No, we weren't attacked. We can't even talk about preemptive self-defense. That's something that the president has brought up. But preemptive self-defense under the Caroline Doctrine, again, I hate to bring it up, but it is the Constitution after all. And the Caroline Affair is a case under the Supreme Court dating back to the 1840s, I guess, when the British intercepted a U.S. ship, the Caroline, that was transferring rebels and equipment to rebels operating north of the Maine border in Canada. And the Brits intercepted the ship, and they made the case that they were authorized to intercept it under the notion of preemption, that the ship posed an imminent threat to the British security and sovereignty, and they had no choice but to intervene. They couldn't wait for the ship to land. The Supreme Court of the United States heard the case and found in favor of the British. And therein comes the concept of the imminent threat, the imminent nature of a threat, which now is what you have to address when you speak of preemptive self-defense. There was no imminent threat from Iran. How do we know? Because we were engaged in negotiations with the Iranians at the time, negotiations which blunt any argument of preeminence because we were addressing the threat. An imminent threat means that it's happening now and there's nothing you can do to avoid it. We attacked them, a surprise attack. We committed a war crime called perfidy. Perfidy is when you raise the white flag of truce and say, come in and let's talk. And while you're talking, you attack them. This is the second time we've done it within a year. We did it in June, and now we did it again. So this is an illegal war of aggression that we're talking about. So that's clearly the first thing everybody has to understand. There can be no debate, discussion about this. Everything we're doing is illegitimate.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's an excellent explanation, but also there's a presumption among Americans and the American corporate media that Iran has no right of self-defense. For example, when Iran shoots down American aircraft that are engaged in bombing Iran, then we're told from the New York Times or others that shooting down our aircraft is escalation. Things like that, which is just completely absurd. And that, you know, we're told that Iran doesn't have a right to exist. We're told that Iran doesn't have a right to nuclear weapons. Well, determined by who? Determined by who? You know, by the U.S.? But we developed nuclear weapons. It was who gave us the right? I mean, isn't it a natural right for any country to...
Nuclear weapons, the right of self-defense is a right.
The right of self-defense, exactly.
Yeah, look, we shoot down balloons that fly over our territory. Balloons. We send up F-22 fighters and they fire multi-million dollar missiles to shoot down balloons. So when the United States flies a reconnaissance drone and it enters an Iranian airspace, and we know that that reconnaissance drone is collecting intelligence to facilitate future targeting of Iran, Iran has a right to shoot that down. No ifs, ands, or buts. They have an inherent right of self-defense. Nuclear weapons is non-negotiable. Iran's not allowed to have nuclear weapons because Iran signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty as a non-nuclear weapons state. So in signing the treaty, they said, we will not seek to acquire nuclear weapons. But in doing so under Article 4, now they are authorized to have the totality of the nuclear fuel cycle for peaceful purposes. That means they're allowed to enrich uranium. They're allowed to, convert uranium feedstock into to raw uranium into feedstock that can be enriched. They're allowed to have nuclear reactors and make fuel for nuclear reactors. They're even allowed to reprocess the fuel as long as it's done under international safeguard inspections. But they can't have nuclear weapons.
Well, but hold on, Scott. I want to push back on that a little bit here because, number one, Israel has not signed the non-proliferation treaty, correct? The United States has, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep.
But the United States has already violated its own signature of that by providing nuclear weapons technology to Israel, which means the United States has broken the good faith agreement of that, the entire protocol, the structure of that agreement. So why should...
Haven't admitted that.
Well, okay, that's right. Haven't admitted it. So lying about not breaking the NPT. But why should Iran honor an agreement that they made in good faith with countries that are operating in bad faith in deception in order to violate the spirit of that?
The United States, and they didn't make an agreement with Israel. Iran made an agreement with the international community. The Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty is an international treaty, so it's Iran's commitment to the world.
Okay.
Iran, you don't get to say, because you're cheating, I get to cheat. That just doesn't operate anywhere in the legal profession. I don't get to say, hey, because Donald Trump cheated on his income taxes and has never been called out on it, hell, I get to cheat too, and you can't call me out on it. No, if I cheat on my taxes, IRS comes in and puts me in jail.
But there is a legal premise for contract fraud and misrepresentation,
That's an American issue, not an Iranian issue.
Uh-huh.
The Iranians don't get to claim anything based upon America's behavior. Iran must adhere to its obligations. If it doesn't want to adhere to its obligations, then Iran can withdraw from the NPT.
Okay.
North Korea did.
Do you think that they would do that?
No. Why would they? Iran.
I don't know. I'm wondering.
That it doesn't want a nuclear bomb. It doesn't need a nuclear bomb. A nuclear bomb would actually be bad for it. And they've proven their point. Iran just beat us in a straight up fight.
Good point.
And I know there's going to be people out there that say, no, they didn't. I say, yes, they did. We didn't accomplish any of our objectives. I mean, even Pete Hegseth pounding his chest and saying how he sunk the Iranian Navy. Hey, Pete, it was Iranian Navy ships that just put mines in the Strait of Hormuz, shutting it down. You sunk big ships. You didn't destroy capability because the Iranians know what they're doing here. But Iran just beat two nuclear armed states at their own game. Okay. They compelled us to seek termination of the conflict. It wasn't Iran that came crawling to America. It was America that went crawling to Egypt, Turkey, and Pakistan saying, please open up an avenue of negotiation so we can bring an end to this thing because it's gone bad for us. We haven't won this war. Now, I know, we have the spinmeisters out there pretending we won the war. But the reality is we didn't collapse the regime. That was a stated objective, regime change. Now, Trump can say we have a new regime in place. We don't. It's the same president, the same foreign minister.
That's right. Trump is just talking BS there.
It's the same system. I mean, they have a supreme leader. And the constitution of the Islamic Republic still, reigns supreme. The regime is in place. We didn't suppress their ballistic missile capabilities. They're still able to launch missiles and hit targets. They blew the crap out of our facilities. And we didn't accomplish anything. We desperately tried to do a raid on the Isfahan nuclear facility, and that turned into a Desert One debacle. Thank God we didn't leave any dead people on the desert. But, and we can't secure the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, the bottom line is the military has had to tell the president, we can't free the Strait of Hormuz. We can't secure it. Iran has it, and there's nothing we can do to stop them.
Let's talk about the Strait there. Again, sorry to interrupt, but I'm getting your point. I think you're absolutely correct that actually control over the Strait is more powerful than any nuclear weapon Well, so control over the Strait, which is clearly in the hands of Iran, and as you said, there was additional mining of the southern portion of that Strait now, which forces ships to sail right next to Iran's total control. And yet I've seen so many, whoever's left in MAGA and Trump people claiming that, like Trump screaming in his social media posts saying, Iran must open it immediately. And it's like, okay, it's just words. That doesn't do anything. You can say all the words you want, but Iran still controls the strait. And that means they control the backbone of the energy of planet Earth, period.
No, this is why Trump is desperate for a solution right now, because this is humiliating the United States. We have been operating in the Gulf since the time of Jimmy Carter, when the Carter Doctrine was first formulated, that said, in exchange for oil producing countries of the region to, allow the interests of the United States to dominate their energy production, policies, we will secure them. We will provide security guarantees. They will subordinate themselves to us. We will make sure that they are safe. We have said we can keep the Strait of Hormuz open. It's long been recognized as a strategic choke point. If people need go back in 1987 on Operation Earnest Will, where the U.S. Navy reflagged the Kuwaiti tanker fleet and escorted it through the Strait of Hormuz to keep it from being hit by Iraq and by Iran. And we could do it at the time, but the Iranians watched and learned, and they now have developed the capabilities to shut that down. And we don't have anything that can keep it open. Our Navy can't do it. Our Air Force can't do it. We don't have sufficient ground power to do it. So the Iranians own this. It is theirs, and they have declared it is ours. And if they shut it down and continue to shut it down, this is going to cause permanent damage, permanent economic damage around the world. I mean, Europe is about to be hit with an energy crisis that it's not going to recover from. Asia, you're looking at the potential for real economic harm, to include China. That's why China has intervened, actually, and put pressure on Iran to come to the table. Iran didn't want to come to the table. They're winning this war. I mean, they're like, keep bombing us. We don't care. You're not destroying us. You're not breaking our will. We're destroying you. We're humiliating you. But the Iranians were told by the Chinese that China needs this oil to start flowing because, a significant part of their energy comes from the Middle East, comes from, those countries who can't ship their oil now because of the closure. So China told the Iranians they have to sit down and talk with the Americans. And so the Iranians agreed.
But you said in previous interviews, and I agree with you, that the U.S., and I'm paraphrasing, but the U.S. really can't be negotiated with because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the problem is, the U.S. will murder the negotiators or will use it, as you said, perfidy, as an excuse to launch an attack. And so, and numerous Iranian officials have said that we cannot negotiate with the United States of America because the people that are serving in that role, Witkoff and Kushner, et cetera, are not trustworthy. They're not operating in good faith, and they never keep their word. So my question to you, Scott, first of all, feel free to correct me if I've said anything incorrect there, but how does there ever become a diplomatic solution to this?
Because there has to be an alternative to war. That's just the fact that the Iranians despise Witkoff and Kushner is irrelevant. I mean, because at the end of the day, the United States and Iran are going to have to come to some sort of agreement. Iran has some leverage now. They may insist that they need somebody other than Kushner and Witkoff to be present, or at least to conclude, meaning somebody like J.D. Vance will have to be involved. But there will also have to be other agreements that Iran will no longer trust an executive order like the JCPOA,
right,
which Trump pulled from. So there will have to be, a binding international agreement with security guarantees. And, the United States will have to, have increased diplomatic exposure for any withdrawal. For instance, they're going to have to make agreements with Russia and China and regional powers, et cetera. This isn't going to be a very simple thing. It's going to be a very complicated, peace agreement. And the United States is going to have to give up all leverage of control it had over Iran. For instance, it doesn't matter if Kushner or Witkoff are there. What matters is that the sanctions are lifted. What matters is that the Security Council terminates all resolutions, because once you terminate those resolutions, you can't go back. Right now, the United States has resolutions on the book against Iran from the Security Council back when China and Russia were playing, you know, the game. But now Russia and China aren't playing the game. So once you wipe the slate clean, you're never going to get another Security Council resolution against Iran, because Russia and China will veto it. The same thing at the board of directors of the IAEA, wipe the slate clean. So Iran is going to come out of this with its economy fully under its control, unrestricted right to sell oil at fair market value. This is what the Iranians care about. They don't care about Jared Kushner. They don't care about Steve Witkoff. They don't trust the United States at all. But what they want is, you know, the lifting of sanctions and the international community rallying around their cause. So that if the United States wants to do anything, it has to do it unilaterally. Right now, the United States gets right under a facade of, international law. But that will end.
Well, I really appreciate the detail in the description that you just gave. And I think you're absolutely correct in that the critical component here is the lifting of sanctions, because Iran has been under these economic sanctions for decades that have really hampered its ability to naturally grow and innovate. And yet it's still done well despite the sanctions. However, so 2 points here, Scott. One is that the process that you just described of the multilateral involving other nations, guarantees of this agreement, that process, including the unwinding of sanctions, is a multi-month process, as you, well, you know better than most, because you lived a lot of this, right? That's a multi-month process. And secondly, I don't think that Trump will ever agree to lifting sanctions, because he will always be pressured by Netanyahu, at least in my assessment. So, two-part question to you. One is, the Strait of Hormuz would obviously stay closed during this entire process of putting together this agreement. That alone would cause severe global economic damage to the parties that you just accurately mentioned, such as Asia and Europe, et cetera. But at the end of the day, I don't see the U.S. ever agreeing to lifting sanctions on Iran. How does that ever happen, in your view?
Well, first of all, it won't be a multi-month. It can happen instantaneously. The United States simply nullifies its sanctions, then goes to the Security Council with the Russians and the Chinese and passes a resolution that nullifies all the UN things, and then goes to the IAEA and passes that. It can be done in a week.
Really?
Absolutely. There's just absolutely.
If they want to.
Correct. But yeah. The Strait of Hormuz is being choked up. Trump right. Trump is in trouble right now. That's what people need to understand. He is watching. Donald Trump is an egomaniac. I hope people will understand. He's a narcissist. We don't have the standard presidency. We have a cult of personality, and it's all driven around Donald Trump. He doesn't care about the American people. I hope that's been recognized by those who claim to support him. He doesn't put America first. He doesn't even put Israel first. I know that's a cute little slogan that's put out there. He puts Donald Trump first. That's all he cares about.
That's true.
That's it.
Yeah.
And, so that means that his center of gravity, if we're trying to define what it is, isn't the national security of the United States. He doesn't care about Iran's nuclear program. He doesn't even know what it is. He's just been told to care about it. He cares about Donald Trump, and he cares about his legacy. He wants to go down in history as the greatest president that ever walked the face of the earth. And he's been telling us all along how great he is. It's hard sometimes to, get past the loyalists, the MAGA base, who are just blind to everything because they've bought into the cult of personality. I mean, they are living manifestations of everything that James Madison warned us about back when, the Federalist Papers were written. Factionalism, the danger of factionalism, and how it can lead to a breakdown of checks and balances and the promotion of the tyranny of the executive. Well, that's what's happened here. We have a president who doesn't care about the Constitution, openly says so, says he's a dictator, said that at Davos openly, says that the rule of law doesn't matter, only his sense of morality matters, ignores Congress, ignores the Supreme Court. I mean, this isn't an American president. This is an American dictator. But the good news is we still have elections for the moment. And in November, there's a midterm election. President Trump understands one of the reasons why he's pushing for a ceasefire right now is that this war is potentially fatal to his legacy. He promised his base that he would not go to wars like this. He said, I will not do this. And yet now he's done it. And he can't say he did it to get rid of Iran's nuclear program because it's still there and they're not going to give it up. He can't say he did it to get rid of the ballistic missile program because it's still there and they're not going to give it up. So he's going to have to come up with some sort of spin. And that spin may be, you know, related to peace. You know, he did what nobody else could do. He had to go to war to break the paradigm. Now he's able to construct the framework of peace. I'm the greatest peacemaker. Give me the Nobel Peace Prize, et cetera, et cetera. You know, whatever, however he spins this. But if he doesn't spin it properly, the Democrats are going to take the House in November. And that's the end of the Trump presidency right there. It's over because they will impeach him over and over and over again. I would anticipate that, you know, if they don't convict him, there will be at least four successful impeachments, meaning that he will impeach and be put on trial four times between November, you know, between January when the new Congress comes in and the time his term ends up. Four times.
Oh yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that.
And that paralyzes the presidency, and nothing gets done. It's over. The worst thing that can happen for him is that he loses the Senate. And he irritates people enough to where they impeach and they convict.
Yeah.
And now it's a whole different ballgame for Trump. And this is a realistic proposition right now. This is not out of the blue. And Trump is in a panic, a sheer panic. His staff, his advisors are in a panic. J.D. Vance is looking at what was a sure thing into being that he may also get in, you know, legal trouble. So Donald Trump isn't going to play stupid games right now. He's not going to sit there and drag this thing out. This has to be resolved quickly. It has to be resolved decisively, and it has to be resolved in a manner which allows Donald Trump to spin it, you know, in a somewhat positive step. Iran isn't going to cave in. They're not going to give in to his demands. He's going to have to adjust to them. They're not going to adjust to him. And so that's why I you know, the Strait of Hormuz, the fact that the Iranians control it and aren't going to relinquish it, you know, this is the death grip for this president, because as the global economy starts to collapse, everybody will blame it on Trump. And then you're going to see everything collapse. You know, we're about to see NATO collapse. Now, some people support it. I do as well. But if it collapses in a vacuum, meaning that it just it happened because of incompetence, it's not a planned collapse. You know, we drop buildings, you know, with planned explosions. You know, we blow down, they come, implosions. That's good. We wanted to do it. But if you're in downtown Albany and a building just falls out of the blue, that's bad. That's unplanned. That shouldn't have happened. You know, right now we're seeing the collapse of everything. I call it the empire terminating event. We're seeing NATO collapse. We're seeing relationships in the Pacific collapse. I mean, Japan and South Korea, we just stripped away their air defense without even coordinating with them. What kind of ally does that? And now, because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, they're going into energy rationing. What kind of ally does that? Their economies are going to collapse. What kind of ally does that? You know, the world is going to be turning away from the United States because we're literally the worst thing in the world. You know, you talk about the Midas touch. You know, Donald Trump, he loves that gold. I mean, you just take a look at the White House. It's all gold. His toilets are gold. Everything's gold. The Midas touch, whatever he touches is gold. But you know that the Midas touch isn't a blessing, it's a curse. Because everything you touch turns to gold, which means it dies. And Donald Trump is touching our friends and our allies, and they're dying. They're losing. This man is a curse on the world. And he will lose the election because of this decisively. There will be a collapse of support for Donald Trump in the United States if he doesn't change the trajectory of what's happening in the Middle East right now.
All right, Scott, well said. I think your analysis is right on track with where things are headed right now, although possibly Trump could reverse course at some point here. But I don't hear him listening to the American people at all or listening to reason. Let me give out your website. ScottRitter.com will take you to Scott's Substack page, which is filled with many, many interviews and analysis, articles and pieces there. And Scott is one of the most prolific, interviewees on YouTube and other platforms as well. You do so much work, Scott, and it's greatly appreciated. And Scott, please stand by because we're gonna do another interview with you here. So this is part one of the interview with Scott Ritter. You can find part two at brightvideos.com. And in part two, we're going to talk about the global reformulation of power that Scott just alluded to there. So what happens, what does the world look like when the U.S. is weakened, the empire's peak days are over, and Iran becomes essentially a superpower by controlling about 20% of the world's energy and other important products like helium and sulfuric acid, etc. We'll cover that in part two with Scott Ritter. So until then, thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams with brightvideos.com. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my site here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, you know, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, you know, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools for knowledge and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com.